Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It is such a privilege and honor. I appreciate the elders giving me the opportunity and the chance to speak before you this morning. I have been preaching for many years, and I got to tell you, I miss it and I love it. I'm hoping to bring something to you this morning that we can all benefit from. And of course, my ultimate goal is to speak in accuracy and truth. Now, don't shoot me, but I have something of a different kind of lesson to bring to you today. As the scripture was being read this morning, can you think of what it must have been like to be there? I mean, think about all of those things that were going on. And spoiler alert, we will. But think about all of those things that were going on that those people of Rome experienced, that those Jews experienced. Think about their feelings. Think about their perceptions and how they looked around them. The title of this lesson is Looking Upon Jesus. And that's exactly what I would like for us to do. With the time that we have this morning, you know, it's funny because when I started to think about this lesson, I was reminded there was a TV show that I used to watch with my father long, long time ago. It was a show from the 80s and 90s. It was called Quantum Leap. And if you remember that show, it was about a character who transports through time, and they get to take the place of a person from history, and they get to experience all of the perceptual sensations of the person that was going on. And they were actually, the guy's name was Sam, he would actually go through their lives. He would do the things that they were doing, and he was supposed to do it in a specific way, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought, how interesting would it be if we had the ability, imagine if we had a portal through time or something here, and we could step through that portal and we could become different people and to truly understand how different people have looked upon Jesus in varying different encounters. And in an unbiased way, to really put ourselves in their shoes and visualize Jesus with all of the senses that they were using at the time. To see the Master as he was through their eyes. To make careful notes of each perception. And finally, what we will do at the end of the lesson is make a practical application. Why should all of these trips through times and encounters be important to us? So we are going to use our imaginations a little bit this morning. Bear with me. I love imagery. I use it a lot in my practice. And imagery is something that is very, very important because it helps us to understand things from different perspectives. So I want you to imagine, if you will, that we're stepping through the portal for the first time, that we are going to arrive into the body of the person, the very first person that we're coming into contact with. And as the light clears, as it begins to dissipate, the first thing that we start to become aware of is that where we are, we seem to be at night. It is nighttime and the stars are out. It's a beautiful, beautiful night out in the desert. And we notice that all around us are dunes and mountains in varying areas. And we notice that we are starting to approach what looks like the oil lamps and lights of a small city, kind of a small dwelling. But we're not headed towards those lights. We're actually headed more towards the outskirts of the city. And let us now become aware of where exactly we are. We notice that we're also mounted on top of a camel. That's something that I should have noticed at first. We start to look around us and look at how we're dressed. We seem to be dressed in Eastern or Asian, maybe Arabian or Persian tunics. Maybe the garb, maybe there's a... We look around us and we see that there's actually a number of different types of garbs and clothing. Some of our friends, our traveling companions, look like they're from dynastic Mongolia or China, Persia. And we seem to be in a very large group. There's a lot of us, a lot of camels. And we notice... And we start to become aware of our feelings that we're really excited. I didn't notice this before, but I'm really, really excited. I didn't know how jazzed I was at first, but now I'm starting to really feel it. We are really, really excited. And we notice that we're excited because everybody around us, and now we're going to start looking at where they're looking, and wow, there is a giant, bright, gleaming star in the sky. And it seems to be hovering right over the area that our caravan is going currently. We start to become aware of the memories of this person. We remember that not many days before, we were in the presence of a king. And even the king was asking us, where is this child? Where, how did you know about this child? And we start to become aware again of the life of this person. We become aware of the many, many hours, I mean countless hours that we heard about these stories from our grandfather and our father. And maybe those stories were even passed on from them, from their fathers and their grandfathers. And we remember studying, poring over these ancient manuscripts and texts. We start to remember, wait a minute, I know what's going on. This is a big deal. The person that we're approaching, the star that we're following, it is very important. It means something. Now, if you want to follow along continuously in the story, I'm in Matthew chapter 2, particularly in verses 10 and 11. We start to approach a small hut. Looks like something that's not really all that important. I mean, why is this star here? But this is not, the city's over there, but this is a small hut. It's a almost looks like a barn of some kind. We see a bunch of animals. We see a bunch of animals there, but the star is there. And everybody stops. So we stop as well. We halt our camel. And we dismount. And we begin to follow the group. Let's follow the group and see where it goes. As we approach the small hut, we see a man and we see a woman seated near a manger. And the woman has a swaddled baby in her arms. But we remember, this isn't just some baby. This isn't just some hut. This is a big deal. We are... absolutely immersed with this feeling of awe and wonder. This is the child. We remember the text. We remember the manuscript. We remember all of the things that we studied. I can't believe it. This is the child. That's amazing. We're struck with such awe and wonder, and we just fall down on our knees, and we're so excited to see this baby. One of the things that we notice, too, is how small. How tiny this baby is, especially in comparison with the adults and all the animals nearby. And this is such a small child. But we remember that the prophecies say that right here he is in front of us, right here. This small child is going to bear the name Emmanuel, God with us. It's such a small, tiny little thing. But we are just so amazed. And we prostrate ourselves on the floor and we begin to unpack and place the gifts that we had brought with us on our saddlebags. We present our, we present gold. We present a jar of myrrh and a portion of frankincense. We brought these very precious gifts all the way across. All on this long journey, and we remember, wow, this was a long journey. We're very, very far away from home. But you know what? It was worth it. Because as we look upon this child and we visualize how tiny he is, but how amazing his life is going to be for all who look upon him. Once again, we are just struck with such amazement and wonder. Maybe we even start to cry out of joy because here he is. And we've already started to hear the stories coming in from around the town of people standing out in the fields and things happening in the sky that nobody can explain, and people are running in. We see shepherds coming in. We see all kinds of people coming into this town, in over to this hut, to this small little barn. And we're just amazed. And as we look upon Jesus, we prostrate and we worship this child, knowing that this child is going to be a big, big deal. And as the light begins to encompass us, we are leaving this current story, we're leaving this current event, this current encounter. And as the light starts to dissipate again, we start to semi-become aware of where we are. But the first thing that we start to notice as the light completely dissipates and we fully enter into the body of this next encounter, we start to become extremely aware. Ow! Ooh, that does not feel good. We become aware of an absolutely excruciating pain coming from our midsection, our lower abdomen. And it hurts. It hurts so bad that when we first enter this body, I'm not sure I want to be in this encounter. This hurts. It is painful. We also start to notice that we're in the body of a woman. And we're dressed in the style and the custom of the culture. Around the first century, we notice that we're in kind of raggedy robes, nothing that would be considered of importance or status or stature. And we are in pain. It does not feel good. We're still in pain. If you want to follow along with me, the story is in Luke chapter 8, verses 42 through 48. We also start to become aware as we're trying to not focus on this extreme, excruciating pain. We start to become aware that we're also in the middle of a large crowd. We're on the fringe of it. We're on the outside of it because there's so many people. They're just a throng of people and they're pressing in and pressing in. And we know that this is important. We start to become aware that this is important for some reason, that all these people are gathering together because they're encompassing a person. And we start to become aware of this person's thoughts. We start to become aware that not only is this excruciating pain, but the life we have lived is terrible. We start to also become aware that we're bleeding. How embarrassing. How shameful. We know that our life, our entire life, has been spent living as an outcast of society. Nobody really cares if we are present. Nobody cares if we stand nearby. We're treated as a leper. We're treated as somebody who has a disease. We're dismissed and discounted. Nobody cares if we live or die, quite frankly. And the shame, we begin to feel, trying to, at least the pain of the shame seems to stem the tide of the excruciating physical pain. But the pain of the shame, the pain of the embarrassment because of the bleeding and because of being a part of the lowest form of society, being unclean, being outcast. I'm not sure I want to be alive anymore. But our focus, we start to become aware that our focus is what's going on in the center of this throng. And in the center of this throng is a man. And as people are moving about him and thronging him and throwing themselves down in front of him and talking to him and conversing with him, we see his face occasionally. But we know this woman, the body of this person knows his name is Jesus. Wait a minute. He's a grown man now. We just saw him as a tiny, tiny little baby, and he's a grown man now, and all these people are thronging him. And why are they thronging him? He must be somebody of great importance. And we start to remember that, wait a minute, I know that he's been going around, and there's been stories coming from all of the towns everywhere. People have been coming into town and leaving town and taking stories everywhere with them that he heals people. And we start to become once again aware of this woman's thoughts that, I remember, I want to touch him. I'm not going to be able to get close to him because I'm unclean and I'm outcast and nobody cares if I live or die. But if I could just reach my arm, maybe through people's legs, or if I can just try to crawl through people, and if I could even just touch the hem of his garment, and we do. And immediately, as we touch the hem of his garment, the fringe of the robe that he's wearing, the first thing we start to feel is the pain is gone. The pain is gone. There's no pain. That's amazing. I feel so good. But then the next thought is, as he says, who touched me? Ooh, I start to feel a little bit afraid because we know what position we hold in society. And we're a little bit afraid because we know we shouldn't have touched somebody. Being an unclean person, we shouldn't have touched anybody else. But we are also a very honest person. We realize that what has just happened is miraculous. And we are healed from that pain. That pain is gone. The bleeding stopped. And we're simultaneously on the balance of being incredibly excited and overjoyed. And what's going to happen to me? Because as an unclean person, we just touched him. But we're going to do the right thing. So we are going to fall down in front of him, and we're going to say, Lord, I'm sorry. I just wanted to touch it. If I could just touch the hem of your garment, I knew that you would heal me. And as we look upon Jesus from the ground, and he looks down at us, he tells us something that we know that as we leave this woman's body, she's going to remember for the rest of her life. He says, daughter, your faith has made you whole. The joy and relief that this woman feels is instant and cannot be expressed in human words. And as we leave this body and we're looking on his face and he's looking into ours, immediately, we leave this body feeling such an amazing, amazing feeling of joy and satisfaction. As the light begins to fade, as the light begins to clear, we go from feeling, we left that last body feeling so excited and overjoyed, and we start to enter this new body. And immediately, I'm not happy. We are not happy. And at the same time, we feel this intense feeling of indignation and bitterness, and yet supreme satisfaction. We become aware of what's going on around us. We're on a hillside of some kind, and there's there's so many people around us. And a bunch of these people, and we start to become aware of the pride and the indignation that we feel. Why are you crying? A bunch of these people are crying and wailing. And there's a bunch of our fellow compatriots. We realize that we know each other, and they're hurling curses in the native language that we speak. And we're all very, very angry. And we start to become aware of ourselves. We start to become aware of how we hold ourselves. We start to become aware of how important we are. We look down and we realize, wow, I am somebody of extreme importance. Our garments are of the finest silk, and our tunic is of the best material. We have these fringes that go along the outside of our garments. We have these large boxes that hang from our wrists. We are very, very important. And as we look around us, we realize that not only are we on a rocky hill, and there's all of these people around us, but we also start to become aware that there's a lot of Roman soldiers around us. And there are three crosses mounted to this hill. And we notice that our focus is on one of the people on those crosses. And once again, we start to become very aware as we see him. We see his broken, bleeding body. We see his scarred body that has blood dripping down. We see a crown of thorns. Those Romans do such a great job. We start to become aware once again that we are very indignant. That's right. That's what you deserve, sir. Because we are also so bitter and angry. How dare you? How dare you? This man dared to call himself the Son of God. He dared to tell us, the masters of the Scriptures, that we didn't know what we were reading. He dared to call us a brood of vipers. He dared to call us whitewashed tombs. How dare he? This is what you deserve. This is exactly what you deserve. If you want to follow along, it's in Matthew chapter 27, verses 39 through. We see a lot of our compatriots going by, and as they walk back and forth upon the cross, they're wagging their heads. Absolutely, that's what you deserve. And they're hurling insults at him. You said that you could destroy the temple and raise it again in 3 days. What's happening now? Why are we so angry? We start to become aware of our previous encounters. What? Wait a minute, this was the baby? This was the man that just healed us? Why? I mean, look at the way we're dressed. Why would we be so angry? And we start to become in conflict with ourselves because we had these previous encounters that were overjoyed and amazing and awe and wonder. But why? Why would I now be so not just bitter and angry, but righteously indignant that this baby and this man who healed us, he's dying? And I'm happy about that. Why would I be happy about that? This doesn't make any sense. We put gold and frankincense and myrrh at his parents' feet and at his infant body. What is wrong with us? We also remember that just before we entered this person's body, not just were we bitterly angry and righteously indignant, but we were laughing. We were laughing at this man. He's dying. As the light begins to encompass us, we leave this body. And as we look upon Jesus, we feel a strong feeling of sadness and grief overtake us, while still trying to figure out, where did this sense of righteous indignation come from? This pleasure? Sense of pleasure? It doesn't make sense. The light starts to clear. And as the light starts to clear, we begin to notice, wait a minute, did we go anywhere this time? What happened? This is the same place. It's the same place. There's the same guy on the cross, and there's the same people that are hurling insults and curses, and the same people are weeping and wailing. What happened? We start to become aware of our feelings once again. We start to become aware of the fact that I don't know who this guy is. Frankly, I don't really care. I know that same old job, different day. Start to become aware of how I'm dressed. I'm dressed in a soldier, actually. I guess I'm a soldier. I'm wearing the garb of a Roman centurion, the garb of a Roman soldier. And is that the guy that we actually just were a couple of minutes ago? And he is laughing. He's laughing and he's hurling insults and curses. And I mean, some of the stuff I can understand. My Hebrew is not exactly the most wonderful. But we start to become aware once again of our feelings of, it's kind of a blah day. We start to become aware of our memories and how our feelings about our status is. I mean, we're a soldier. Why are we doing this? Did we really spend all those years training and fighting for the glory of Rome for this? This is a menial task. But these Jews, you got to give these Jews what they want. You know, Pilate, hey, you know what? A soldier's life is a soldier's life. Pilate says, we do it, we do it. We're going to do it. But man, whew, we have to go through all of this. These people are weeping and wailing over here, and these people are hurling curses. I mean, honestly, I don't care who does what, but just please stay apart from each other, because we really do not want to have to send in our soldiers and quell a rebellion, because how are we going to explain this to Pilate? If a rebellion starts today, how are we going to explain this? We all of a sudden we start to notice one of the men on the cross is starting to speak in a language I can't quite make out exactly what he said, but something about Elijah. I know that Elijah is important to these people. And then we notice that these people start laughing. Are you laughing about Elijah? What's your problem? Some of them even start to spit on him. Then he asks for a drink. Okay, understood that. All right, get this man some vinegar. Go dip a sponge there and give him something. We need to hurry this up here. Then he cries out. We don't know exactly what he cried out, but he cries something out. Whoa, what is going on? All of a sudden, the ground starts trembling. The earth around the hill is rumbling. Whoa, is this an earthquake? What is going on? The sky that was perfectly clear a moment ago has suddenly obscured the sun, and it became really, really dark. And what is going on? Soldiers, come here. All of a sudden we hear screaming from the city. Are people screaming in the city? What is going on here? All around us, people are freaking out. These people that were laughing a couple of minutes ago, they are freaking out. They are running. They are running from the hill. Even our own soldiers, the ones that we're in charge of, hey, where are you going? They're running from the hill. This is crazy. Has the world suddenly gone mad? If you want to follow along, it's in Matthew chapter 27, verses 51 through 53. We start to become aware of some stories that are lingering, that we hear people whispering about. Something happened with the temple and the veil, and something is going on over here, and something's going on over there. And is that one of our dead compatriots walking around? And people are talking about dead people walking around in the city? What is going on? We start to remember our past encounters. This is the baby. This is the healer. And not too many moments before, this was the object of our hatred, the object of our being angry. But what is going on here? As we look upon this dead body of this man, as we look upon his face, and we observe all of the things that are going on around us, and we do not know how to make sense of this. I mean, we're a soldier, for Pete's sake. We know how to handle pressure. But what is going on? I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. And even though, quite frankly, we're probably not very religious, except for the pantheon of gods that our fathers and grandfathers, you know, worshipped, we look upon this person and we see these things happening. And with a very sincere heart, of a truth, this man must be the Son of God. And we say that out loud. The practical application is this. I know this hasn't been a scripture-heavy lesson, but the practical application is this. There's been many people who have looked upon Jesus and seen many different things. Some have seen hope. Some have seen just a man, just a Jew, just a carpenter. Some have seen him as an object of hatred. Here's the question. If we were to have time to take another trip, we might take a trip where, as the light clears, we start to become aware of the fact that, wait a minute, blue tie, shirt, black pants, I'm me. We start to become aware that we're just going about our daily lives, going to school, going to work, driving down the highway. Maybe we're at the shopping center. Maybe we're working out in the gym. All of a sudden, we hear the blast of a shofar, a ram's horn. And from everywhere, all at once, we hear the words, "Time is over." And we start to become aware that as we look up, we see things in the sky that we can't even describe here. Amazing things that can't be described with human words. But one thing that we are going to know is that we look up and we see his face. And regardless of whether that was the baby, the healer, the object of hatred, or just a man that changed our lives forever. Here's the question. As you look up and you see his face one day, how will you feel? What will you see? What will be your sensations, your perceptions of the event? Will you react with great fear, terror? Oh my goodness, those crazy people were right. Or will you react with great joy, specifically picking out a song that you want to sing on that day? The question is for you as we end the lesson. Jesus was born into this world as a lowly baby in a lowly manger, a barn. But he was prophesied, and people from everywhere who took the time to study those texts, study those manuscripts, know of him, knew of him, knew where to find him, knew how to worship him. He lived a life where he healed people and did amazing things in people's lives, and people's lives were changed. Told people to go and sin no more. Told people that their faith had made them whole and healed. But he also endured humiliation. He was made fun of. He endured laughing and pain and blood and infected wounds. But if we were to put ourselves in his place, we would know the tremendous amount of love that he felt for everybody on that hillside. The question and the lesson is for you. What will you feel? When you look upon Jesus, as you look upon Jesus in the Scriptures, or you will look upon him one day for yourself, what will you feel? If you've not yet been baptized, fully immersed for the remission of sins, I'm going to tell you right now, that day is going to come, and you're probably going to feel a tremendous amount of terror, a tremendous amount of fear, knowing that you are not in a right state with him. As you look upon his face. Likewise, despite how long we've been a Christian, how long it's been since we were baptized, if you also allow sin to creep into your life, to do those things which we know we ought not, and we let those things become a master over us, once again, we're going to face him with a feeling of great terror. But the time is now. There is time to look upon Jesus and to look upon his blood and to be baptized for the remission of sins or to repent of sins and receive encouragement and support. Whatever your wish, whatever your need may be, don't wait, because we will all look upon Jesus. And as the song is going to be sung now, let us think about that. How we look upon Jesus and what we're going to do about it as we stand and sing.
920 is a great book. 920.